You're with Mike Ryan on today's News Talk Radio. TNT. TNT.
Now, I love Fridays. I really love Fridays. More than ever. Maybe I'm just getting older. I don't know. The station was in the Australian today, and I have to say that's not a picture of Brad Pitt, probably his neighbour, on a bad day anyway. So they are in the Australian today. It's a it's a pretty good story too. Got to thank David Ross for his kind words. It did it exactly as I said. Nothing put in. Wasn't misinformation, disinformation or fake news. It was the entire truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. So help me, TNT Radio. Now, under new laws in South Australia, anyone found breaching COVID-19 rules could be handed a 2-year jail term or $20,000 penalty, while businesses could be fined up to $75,000. Now, instances of not complying include ignoring vaccine mandates or refusing to wear a face mask because they don't work, when visiting high-risk settings such as hospitals, disability care and nursing homes. And so for those that are banging on the desk saying they do work, they do not. Do not work. Science has shown that they do not work. Come out from the top, from the side, from the bottom, even through it. And when you wear it, by the way, you are not protecting yourself. You are trying to protect others. So if, when you see these nongs walking around the street with it on, I've got no idea. I think they have low IQ. I think God was very unkind to them when it came to the brain section, and it's just pure granite. Now, the South Australian government is set to, back to this again, pass laws that will extend its powers to impose vaccination and mask mandates in specific industries for at least the next 6 months. So that's what's going to happen there. Also got to mention, last night I was listening to Patrick Henningsen, a brilliant show as per normal. He's talking about the WHO pandemic treaty. Now, without going into all of the WHO pandemic treaty bits and pieces, what it means in essence is that there is a world government being set up. It's the World Health Organization, the IMF. We also have the UN, we also have international trade, and the US, as per normal, has put up their hand with some suggestions from sleepy, dopey Joe Biden. Maybe not, maybe it's from his administration. Who is controlling that teleprompter? And if you're wondering, you think, that's not going to happen to us. It might happen to Australia, it might happen to New Zealand, what happened to the UK. It's happening now. Okay, it's happening now. And you have about two years, to remove the digit and start taking notice. Ask questions. Just ask questions. Why? And by the way, I had a few words today with some people about this forthcoming election. And I said that I was talking about South Australia and also Queensland with their renewed vigour on draconian laws to make us safe. Stop that terrible virus from knocking you on the head, okay? So anyway, when Labor get in, and they will get in, if you think Victoria was an isolation, was an isolated incident, state, place in the faraway galaxy or planet called Uranus, let me tell you, it's going to happen here throughout the rest of the country because you have predominantly a Labor nation run by a bunch of, well, encouraged by the Greens, need I say any more. So we're going to have climate emergencies. We'll have this pandemic. It's back again. Got the cousin of Omicron, the neighbour of Omicron, some variant there. If you do early treatment, most of the fatalities we've had would not have existed. They are just disgraceful. However, back to our World Health Pandemic Treaty, This is Scott Morrison, and don't forget, we are talking about a conservative government, okay? So, but he wants his government, who's in power right now, they want Tedros and his bunch of thugs to take control of your life.
The World Health Organization meets on May 22, and on the agenda is a potential pandemic treaty which would allow WHO to direct countries in how they control pandemics. Would you consider signing up to that and handing over any controls to the organisation?
I have always been supportive right from the outset and was criticised heavily, I stress, heavily, mocked in fact by the Labor Party for saying the WHO should have those powers and those authorities to be able to go and deal with pandemic situations, because we all know what happened at the start of this pandemic. The problem is we don't know what happened at the start of this pandemic, and I was the one calling to ensure that we had an independent process to understand what happened so it couldn't be repeated. So I have been in the vanguard of those moves internationally to ensure that there is greater protection for world health, to ensure that those world health authorities can come and understand what's going on and be able to assist countries to be able to prevent the spread and outbreak of major infectious diseases. Now, we'll look at the text of all of that, but we have been amongst the countries that have been positive about these sorts of changes. Have to look closely at what the detail is in these things, as you always must. But the idea that countries can just say, no, you can't come in and have a look at a pandemic that's about to break out and actually affect the public health and the economy of the entire world, as we saw with this pandemic, then I think it's only sensible that that's an area of international cooperation that is very, very important, and I've been consistent on that. And remember, the Labor Party mocked me for saying that that was a good idea.
Because they are both as bad as each other. They are dreadful. You have to vote for the Freedom Parties. You must make your vote count. The creep is not creeping anymore. It's on steroids. And before you know it, give yourself that 2 years, even way before then, because they can do things to you now. You're going to say, oh, why didn't I do something about it? Because if you don't now, it is too late. It will be too late. 2 years' time, you can, as they say, as a plane is coming down, plummeting out of the sky, you put your head between your legs, kiss your butt goodbye. And that's what's going to happen. And there are no buts about it. There you are. Just thought I would throw that in. And just one more thing. The CDC in the US is suggesting that 5 through to 11-year-old kids should get a COVID-19 vaccine booster shot. I think that's gone through now. The CDC's press release indicates that more than 4.8 million kids in that age bracket have been diagnosed with COVID-19, aka cold, the flu, while 15,000 ended up in hospital, which is about normal, and more than 180 passed away. Now, okay, 180 children passed away. They're saying COVID. I would love to look at those figures. But just say if they're right. You have to ask yourself just one question, because we know it works. Science knows it works. The government knows it works. The bureaucrats know it works. Your doctor knows it works. What about early treatment?
Talk that matters.
For once, we just need to do what's best for this damn country and not what's best for the world.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Well, for those in the Paterson electorate is what I'm trying to say. The UAP, not that I'm biased by any means, but if I was there, I would be saying, Jason, where do I put my X? Where do I tick the box? And is it Jason Olborn or is it Jason Q Citizen? I don't know. What's it on the ballot papers? Tell me, is it Olborn or Jason Q Citizen?
You know how ridiculous it is? It's Jason Mark Olborn. I'm the only person that managed to get his middle name onto the ballot. But it's a good thing because I'm also at the bottom of the ballot. But the thing is, I'm kind of trying to make my how to vote card an Aretha Franklin song. It's 4563721, given that I'm at the bottom. Yeah, that's it.
Well, so, Tommy Two-Tone did a song too, and they had one hit. So hopefully you're not like that. I mean, we want you to be around for a long time.
Well, I'll make this point. I believe that any UAP candidate who gets up tomorrow night will have that seat for the rest of their political lives. Because what will happen is people will start to see that the truth in politics will come through, provided, of course, the candidates who become the MPs are absolutely dedicated to the cause, which I believe they all are.
Mm-hmm.
I think that what will happen is that the local electorate will join the bandwagon and the support will grow and grow and grow from there, and they'll realise that this was an absolute political miracle,
mm-hmm.
Whichever way it goes. And it might not just be UAP candidates getting in, but hopefully they'll be from a number of different parties in lower house seats, and then it'll be a really big change that it's certainly coming our way. Mike, every day since we've been in this, this is day 11 of 12, of course, and it was a very tough start. We were getting hammered on, in the first few days, particularly like abused. And that's continued throughout the theme, and Patterson's been making the news around the country for reporting on the bad behaviour that's been going on from the establishment parties, and mainly the Labor Party,
mm-hmm.
Who've been attacking both the Liberals and our party as well, and not just the candidates, but also volunteers. And this is where I draw the line, and I had to come out today and make a statement about it, because the unfortunately the member of Parliament, the Labor member, came out last night and denied that this was going on, and that is completely untrue.
So who is this person? Tell me, what's the name of this this denier?
Well,
this,
the member of Patterson is Meryl Swanson.
Right, and she's denying that she's a...
Well, she's basically saying her cover story is saying that that there hasn't been any official complaints made through the AEC. Well, this is nonsense, because we complained directly to her campaign manager, and that was acted upon immediately on the incident involving myself and my volunteer, which were separate incidents.
Mm-hmm.
And the person involved, who was a paid staffer, was moved to a different branch, a different booth. So that was a big one. And there is an active police investigation going on in relation to the Liberal candidate who was physically assaulted with a hammer. Whilst putting in
what?
Core flutes.
A hammer?
Yeah, like, yeah, she was hit. She was hit on the finger with a caused injury on a finger by an overzealous Labor Party elected official.
This is like World Championship Wrestling, isn't it? But with hammers.
It's really getting to that stage. It's beyond a joke. It's showing a pattern, and this is the problem that we're seeing now, is that this whole thing about the mean girls, this is appearing to be a lot deeper, and it's not just, you know, within Parliament itself. It seems to be a culture, and it may not even be limited to the women, but because there's been some men involved in some terrible, terrible behaviour. Another incident happened at Port Stephens just a few days ago, where a Labor official, who I believe was also formerly elected in a council role, he decided to go on the rampage and attack one of our volunteers for, would you believe, leaving a coffee cup on the ground that wasn't even hers, and they were in the process of packing up, but he just went after and after and after, and it was just one of our other volunteers who happened to be the lady's husband stood in and said, no, mate, you don't go a step further, or, you know, I'm going to have to lay you out, or something, words to that effect, and he backed off at that point. It's absolutely disgraceful behaviour. The accusations that they make in these physical attacks are atrocious. I was accused of being a fake, a fraud, a woman abuser. You know, horrible things that people say to you in public.
But if you keep that up, you'll end up getting a gig with the Labor Party next time.
This is it, Mike. You're dead right. Because I think that based on just the result and the amount of interest that I'm getting from the party, I mean, I think they might just parachute me into Fowler, seeing as Christina looks like she's going to drop it.
Well, maybe they just like Aussies and not Canadians. I don't know.
Well, it could be that. But unfortunately for the Labor Party, I won't be able to rejoin that party. Once you leave, you're never allowed back in. That's mm-hmm. a policy of theirs.
Mm.
That would be considered a traitor. But no, that's kind of a good thing. We've moved well past Labor Party politics. But the sad thing is, really, is that we have a choice. We have a choice between not very much and even less in terms of ScoMo and Albo, but I have a feeling that we are moving into an Aussie Joe Biden experience here.
Will we? I mean, look at give us an interpretation, because yeah, I believe Labor is going to be they'll be in government next, and I think they're going to be helped a bit by the Greens, and I think But I think, though, because ScoMo's done such a terrible job, he's an appalling Prime Minister. But tell us how you see Australia being for the next few years under a Labor Party.
Okay, well, I think the first thing that Albo will do after his big cheer squad, and they say he's the greatest Labor victory of all time and all the usual rhetoric, given that it was the worst performance of any opposition leader I've ever seen in my lifetime, the first thing they'll probably want to do is get the 5.2% pay rise through. That'll be a big cheer because everyone will say, oh, look, Albo, he's already working for the workers. Mm-hmm. And what that will immediately do is trigger inflation to go from 5.2 to about 7% in the next cycle. Mm-hmm. And we'll be looking at double-digit inflation by the end of the year. Unemployment obviously will turn around at that point and Liberal will start boasting, oh, we got it down to 3.9, look at it, it's back at 4.3 or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, interest rates are on the rise. And the 2% interest rates have just gone up to, ours went from 2.59 to 2.84. We were lucky we only got the 0.25, but my friends at Westpac went up 0.32. Mm-hmm. I would expect those interest rates will be nudging 5% by Christmas and then pushing up next year. So by Christmas next year, you're looking at a 7.5% interest rate if you want to be serious about it. And that's in 18 months. And so there will be a lot of carnage. And they'll be sitting there saying things like, oh, well, the RBA sets the interest rate, don't you know? Mm. And this is the point that Clive has come out and said that, no, this is only a modern phenomenon since the mid-80s. When Keating changed the rules and created the RBA Act, but the Section 51 of 13 of the Australian Constitution says that the government can take control of banking, and given that we are in a financial crisis, even if they don't want to acknowledge that it is, we certainly have the ability to change that act and set the interest rates. And what that means is it would be attached to mortgages only to save people's homes, because we think that that whilst there will be inflation, we also have a very handy policy with the iron ore, a 15% export licence to pay down that debt, and that will take the pressure off inflation. So if you're going to keep or cap interest rates at a low level for a medium term of 5 years, it makes sense that you can do this in terms of being able to use the government to either have a bond issue, or there's many different ways that you can do it, bringing back superannuation. There's lots of ways that this can actually happen. So we're putting the people first, the homes first, instead of just saying, oh, look, let's let market forces work when we need it to, and let's socialise or make it communism on everything else. Like, they can print money when they need to, but when people are losing their homes, oh, no, it's market forces, everyone. It's just this double standard that people are sick and tired of. And I like what you said earlier about the WHO. My latest sort of advertising to the end of it is a picture of myself and a picture of Tedros, and it basically says, which one do you want to choose on Saturday? Because it's either the nationalists versus or the globalists, and that's kind of where we're at in this scenario. And I was listening to you when you were talking about COVID and Australia. We're now 30% of the country's been infected, and that's up from less than 1% at Christmas. Mm-hmm. So in the last 5 months, 29% of the country's caught the virus. And you know from my reporting that I used to do, Nigeria and Australia both are around about 250,000 cases just before Christmas. Nigeria still hasn't got over 270,000 cases, only 4% double jabbed, and Australia's over 7 million cases in that last 4 or 5 months. And in fact, in Nigeria, there's been one COVID death since February 26 this year, just one. And we're losing 20 or 30 a day in Australia at 95% double jabbed. Mm. So, I mean, who are we kidding? And this idea of joining WHO
terrible.
In any form is a disgrace. But without even being able to do a full investigation to the origins of COVID, the costing of COVID, et cetera, et cetera. And now, of course, you've probably seen today monkeypox, and Bill Gates, oh, he just so happened to have predicted it, and of course a vaccine just got approved last week, wouldn't you know it? I mean, this is just a money-making scheme, if for nothing else, but it's embarrassing that no one in power wants to say anything, and that's why they hate us, because we're asking the right questions at long last.
Yeah, it's also
we're not entrenched.
But it's interesting, too, the Patrick Henningsen last night on TNT radio was saying that this is the start, the formation of a world government. And people were saying, it's never going to happen. It's happening now, isn't it?
100% is exactly how it was going to go. No one knew which way it would start, but it makes sense that you'd start with a mild virus, you turn everyone into a panic, and all you got to do now is turn the volume up on the severity of the next virus. It's going to be more lethal, than they'll line up for another jab. That's obvious. Then, of course, you're going to have what we're seeing now is supply shortages around the world. The World Economic Forum, their great reset, one day it's a conspiracy theory, the next day it's on Greg Hunt's bookshelf, and he worked there. So which one is it, guys? And when you see that play out, well, then you know that the financial instrument is right there. and pundits that I talk to, everyone's got a theory on the next financial thing, but they're talking about the fall of the private Bitcoin versus the centralized digital currency. They're telling us that watch out for the price of gold and silver to crash. Silver's at the lowest price I've seen it, $21 or give or take per ounce US, down from $27. I mean, how is it possible with massive inflation that silver's dropping in value? And then you'd make some inquiries, and it turns out for every ounce of silver that's physical in the world, there are 300 ounces worth of derivatives attached to it. So who's going to get that last piece of silver when all those derivatives get cashed in or out? And this is, again, another financial instrument, a financial collapse waiting to happen. So for people at home, I mean, look, we're just little old Patterson and just one guy trying to run in a field of seven trying to make a difference in Parliament. But if we're that aware and seeing what's going on here, and we can at least sound the warning signal, then at least people can go out on Saturday and go, you know what, these guys in the UAP and other freedom parties, I've heard them, they speak well, they know what they're talking about. We have to turn this thing on its head and just vote those majors last and get rid of them and just upset the apple cart, if nothing else. And then at least Albo gets in there. He's got a very, very shaky parliament, which if minority parliament or not, it doesn't matter. The fact is that's something for him to negotiate and move forward from. Mm. This is the big deal, right? That it's his problem. He wanted to lead in this situation, so be it. It's like people say to me, John Howard picked the exact right election to lose because he knew he was moving into a GFC, so he had 11 years of great progress, and then Rudd went smack into the GFC. This is that period all over again, only virus driven and famine driven and debt driven and geopolitical uncertainty driven. You wouldn't want to be Albanese who doesn't know what's coming and is just playing to the globalist tune. And that's why I think the Clive Palmer policies were that impressive. When I met with Clive on his boat, Australia, and the first thing, he shook my hand and he said, we're going to cap interest rates at 3% for 5 years. My jaw nearly hit the floor. I thought, this is the first time I've met the billionaire miner, and all he cares about is saving your home. And of course, we quizzed him on how that would happen, and he explained it through a few different things, the Constitution, and got into it. And he said, I've got some more news for you as well. And that was when he introduced the iron ore export license. And I thought, wow, we really can win government. But we've been up against it. The media doesn't want to touch us. We talked about this particular situation with the bullying. The media will happily talk to the Liberal candidate, but trying to get some coverage on it on my own story is like pulling teeth. We've just had a little bit of local coverage in the local radio up here, and nothing else in terms of ABC local or any of the other newspapers. They're just not interested. And the word is, oh no, we don't want to influence the election outcome. Oh, so we'll just let bad behaviour continue.
Crap. Now, if somebody wants to, because you'll be floating around tomorrow like a madman, you're the guy that looks a bit like Ross Wilson.
That's what someone was telling me, that's what I look like. I'll take that, but I'm not as good a singer, but
if you do well, you may end up doing the Eagle Rock.
Well, this is it, and we'll certainly be doing that tomorrow night at some stage.
After a few drinks.
Look, we'll need to. It's been the longest campaign in history. We've been going at this, Mike, seriously, since 2016, really, when Trump got in, we realised there was something going on. But we've been following this. I didn't stand in the 2019 election. I wasn't interested. I was basically retired from politics after having a couple of goes at the Senate and being in the Labor Party 15 years ago. But this time round, it all sort of changed. But we've been focused pretty much since the beginning of COVID on this, through activism, through becoming citizen journalists, and now, of course, becoming candidates. But it's a game 40 years in the making. And should I get up tomorrow night or over the next 2 weeks, because I believe counting will be quite close, I'll be able to use recycle Billy Crystal, the comedian's line. It took me 40 years to become an overnight success.
I love it. Look, all the best. Fingers crossed, Matt. If you don't succeed, you'll be with us longer. That's even better for our, because we're selfish mongrels here. We want you all for ourselves. Ross Wilson, Jason, thank you very much.
My pleasure, Mike. Thank you.
This is TNT Radio.
You should hear what Misty Winston is talking about.
I want to actually talk a little bit about the class divide with you, because I think that You know, you just mentioned the class war, and we are in, I don't think people recognize it, we are in a class war and have been for some time. The middle class, the working class, we perhaps have been unaware of the fact that we're in a class war, but that's been going on for a long time. So let's talk a little bit about that and the class divide. Well, how do you see things right now? Because I feel like right now there's a lot of distractions being thrown our way to kind of prevent us from noticing the man behind the curtain.
Right. I think people really need to pay attention to what's going on economically in this country. And I don't just mean in reference to inflation. For example, I talked about this the other night. Bill Gates is actually buying farmland in the United States, a lot of farmland. And there was a woman that came on my show about 2 weeks ago, and she was telling me that Bill Gates is stealing water from her town.
Misty Winston on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Here is a broadcast by Pauline Hanson's One Nation for Federal Election.
Since the introduction of family law in 1975, it has done nothing but destroy families and the lives of too many Australians. I have a big problem with domestic violence and the lies. I am sick and tired of hearing about another suicide, and I feel for those families that have lost their loved ones because of murders that have happened. It can only change if we actually make it happen. The lawyers have made a field day out of this, ripping the guts out of parents and taking everything from them. At the end of the day, they've got nothing left. They're destroyed. If we want change here, then we deal with the perjury, we deal with the lies, we deal with taking the kids away from innocent parents who are fighting tooth and nail just to spend time with their children.
Authorised by R. Miles for Pauline Hanson's One Nation Brisbane. Spoken by Pauline Hanson and Al Appleton.
We are the boy band.
Your tween made you see.
We are the boy band.
It's painful concert number 3.
We are the boy band. We're 5 and 19. We are the boy band. Always singing on key.
You love your kids enough to take them to see their favorite band. Love them enough to make sure they're buckled up in the back seat. Show them you love them. Keep them safe. Visit nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Today's News Talk Radio, tntradio.live.
Now, today we got some information from People for Safe Vaccines on another death of a child aged 10. Registered with the TGA on the 6th of May 2022 after a COVID-19 vaccination, or that injection, because that's what it is. It's not a vaccination, nothing like a vaccination. Vaccinations work in some cases. We know about the failings of the TGA database and similar vaccine injury databases, or databases, whatever the word is, such as VAERS in the US, that publish only a small proportion of total deaths and injuries. According to the TGA, 4 kids aged between 5 to 11 have now died after COVID-19 vaccination. That is a disgrace. That needs some outrage by the media. Nothing said. Mainstream media is silent on all these reported deaths. The TGA doesn't acknowledge these deaths in its weekly report. Rational people can only be shocked. And we need to ask, how many kids need to die before this rollout stops? Merrill Dorey is president of the Australian Vaccination Risk Network, Inc., which is known as AVN, and that exists to further a pro-choice position about vaccination and other health decisions. The AVN is not anti-vaccination, nor are they pro-vaccination. They are pro-choice. First of all, Merrill Dorey, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you so much for the invitation, Mike. It's great to be here.
Look, you were a guest speaker at the Brizzy Rally. What's your thoughts about the progress in the fight against vaccine mandates?
I think that what we're hearing in the media doesn't even begin to describe what's actually happening at the coalface. We have regular events where hundreds of thousands of people are in attendance. I was in Canberra in February, and we had over 1 million there by the most conservative estimates. Australians are rising up because they can see that their rights and their freedoms are being taken away, and they're not going to stand for it. So I do think that there is a growing awareness in the community, and also a growing sense of we have to act now. because if we don't act, it's going to be too late. There are too many things going on around us that, for instance, with the government negotiating with the World Health Organization to give up our sovereignty, these are all things that they have to ask the people, and they're not asking the people. They're just making decisions that affect all of us. And as you said, the deaths from children that are occurring, those are all preventable deaths. No child is dying from COVID, but children are dying from the COVID jabs.
I see the CDC in the States are saying that 15,000 children out of, 4.8 million kids that were vaccinated, not vaccinated, they were shot up with some injection and some poison in their arm. Anyway, they ended up in hospital and more than 180 passed away. First of all, I have to say, I truly doubt those figures because the CDC up to date has been proven to be an entire lying corporation or government department. In fact, 400 odd of their employees never even got the shot. So it says that this hypocritical organization is doing well. But out of all this early treatment, I mean, no one talks about early treatment. You know, it's a bad thing. Well, yeah, we talk about it. But that would have prevented most of those deaths, if not all of them.
See, the issue is that if they allowed early treatment, if they said, yes, you can use ivermectin, yes, you can use hydroxychloroquine, I hope you're not going to get banned from me using those words.
Oh, no, please do. Go ahead.
But if you use those drugs that have been used safely, relatively safely for decades, then you can't possibly bring in a vaccine or a biomedical treatment that is being used here. Yep. On an emergency use authorization or a provisional authorization, you just can't do it. So they had to go out and say that nobody could be treated early. And millions of people died as a result of it worldwide. And they don't care. The government doesn't care. The pharmaceutical industry certainly doesn't care. And the media, which is owned by the pharmaceutical industry, that is their bread and butter. So they're not going to care. That's why people have to be so well informed about this issue. I think that if television and newspapers and radio stations went off the air for a week, the COVID scamdemic would be over.
Yeah, I think so too. I think, look, just we were talking to Naomi Wolf in the US, and somebody said, oh, you were on the left and you're knocking the left on their head because of what's happening with the US in regards to vaccination or the injections and stuff. And she said, well, it's not just the left. If you look at Australia and the UK, you've got a conservative government there in both countries. And if you look at Canada, you've got a libertarian running around doing even worse. It doesn't matter what persuasion you are, whether you're left or right, they're just going to go ahead and do it. And, you know, we talk about conspiracy theories, but think about it. I mean, how is such a thing so coordinated? I mean, the conspiracy theories are now being proven to be correct, aren't they?
That's right. There are conspiracies. There are very few theories. A conspiracy is a real thing. And it was in the 1960s when the CIA coined that term, conspiracy theory, to try to stop people from questioning the assassination of John F. Kennedy. That was used to denigrate people back then. And the same thing is being done now. There are so many terms and words that are being turned around, like anti-vaxxer. Anyone who has a valid, scientific, legitimate question about a medical procedure is considered an anti-vaxxer. And it's a way of stopping the conversation. And what we really need is a conversation about this. We need to be able to talk about it. I watched a video today by Maria Z, who does some amazing work. And she interviewed doctors who have lost their jobs in Australia because they questioned the jab. And that's all they did. They just questioned it. And you can't question it. If the only way that you can actually maintain a scientific debate is by silencing your opposition, you have no evidence. And that's what we see with the government. They have no evidence. They have nothing. All they have is abuse and bullying and a lot of lies, sadly.
Tell us about the AVN court case. What's it about? How AVN is involved? Where it's being heard? And the status of the case?
Yes, that very, very happy to. I run a weekly program called Under the Wire, where I interview different people about topics, usually about vaccination. And about Back in October of 2021, I interviewed a retired barrister named Julian Gillespie, and he had written a brief and had been trying to get lawyers to pick it up for months at that point. And while I was interviewing him, I asked him to give me a copy of it, and he did. And I read it, and I thought, this is a really good approach to what is going on. I think it could win. So I went back to our committee. We're a volunteer-run organization. We've been around since 1994. And I went to the committee and I said, I think this is something we should back. And the committee read it and they agreed. And we gathered together a legal team and we raised money. We're still raising money because this is ongoing. And we are in the federal court, which is the second highest court in the land under the High Court. And we have just been through, a hearing where what was tested was our standing. Now, standing basically means, do we have a reason for being involved in the case? So we have the AVN that has been active on this issue for nearly 30 years. And we also have a co-applicant named Mark Neugebauer, who lost his job because he refused to take the vaccine. And his 7-year-old foster child, the state is trying to forcibly vaccinate him. So the court read our information and they said that neither Mark Neugebauer nor the AVN had standing. And our senior counsel, who has, I don't know, decades of experience, said, if we do not have standing, nobody has standing. So we are appealing that decision, and we hope to be in court within less than a month's time. And then we hope to be in court right after that with our two cases. And I can explain the cases if you'd like.
Yes, please do.
Thanks. The original case that Julian Gillespie showed me was called a mandamus case. Basically, we're taking the case against the Secretary of the Department of Health, Brendan Murphy. Now, he is basically the head of all the decision making in the Department of Health for the Australian government. And his job is to make sure that all of the drugs and vaccines and other therapeutic products in Australia are safe and effective. Otherwise, they need to be withdrawn. And he regularly withdraws drugs and vaccine, not vaccines so often, but we've done vaccine withdrawals in the past. And he does this as a matter of course, because that's his job. Now, we have had more reactions and more deaths from these jabs in the short amount of time that we've been using them than all other vaccines in Australia combined by a long shot. Over the last 50 years, we've had an average of 2.4 deaths per year from vaccinations in total. That's all other jabs. Since February 2021, when we started using the COVID jab, we've had over 840 reactions, and we have over 840 deaths, over 125,000 reactions reported. So that is an exponential growth in both of those things. And yet, the Department of Health and the Therapeutic Goods Administration are busy saying that there is no safety signal, something that they're looking at. This is an experimental jab. It is not approved. It is not tested. It is completely, we're in clinical trials. Anyone who takes this jab is part of a clinical trial. They're not being told that, but we are in a phase 3 clinical trial. And the reason to have a clinical trial is to find out if there are any side effects, concerns, or effectiveness issues that we need to be looking at. And the government is seeing this everywhere. People are dying. People are being injured. We have 7-year-old children dying of heart attacks. We have 8-year-old children having strokes. The most common reaction reported in the 5 to 11-year age group is chest pain. That is not a safety signal, according to the government. Sorry, I got sidetracked. Our mandamus case, the first one, is to get Brendan Murphy to do his job and withdraw the provisional approvals for all currently approved COVID jabs. So if he does that, there will be no more mandates. There will be no more forced vaccination because there won't be any COVID jabs to worry about. That's number one. And number two, which we introduced afterwards, because in January, the government introduced the 5 to 11-year-old vaccinations. And we are very much opposed to that because children, as you said in the beginning, are not at risk from the COVID infection, but they are at great risk of harm and death from the COVID jab itself. So we want the COVID jabbing of 5 to 11-year-olds to be immediately stopped. And we have been trying to get into court to do this since January. And the government, I believe, has been slowing us down with many applications to court, with many other things that they're doing that I believe are, this is my belief, I'm not a lawyer and I'm not passing this by our legal team, but I feel that the government is intentionally slowing this down. We have incredible evidence. When we talk about follow the science, the government is not following the science. Mm. They are not doing anything that is in the least bit scientific. And it is obvious. I don't know if I can share this with you. It'll take a minute. But I recently, this morning, looked up the, there's something that's put up by the Department of Health. It's called Coronavirus at a Glance. And it's a daily report of coronavirus every single day in Australia. And the most recent date is yesterday, the 19th of May. So I looked up the figures for 19th of May, 2020, before there was a jab. 2021, it was about 3 months after the jab was introduced, and 2022, yesterday. And there were a total of 7,000 cases with 100 deaths in Australia as a whole on the 19th of May, 2020. A year later, 3 months into the vaccination campaign, there were 29,000 cases with 910 deaths. And now, yesterday, there have been 6,807,000 cases, 7,976 deaths, and 378,000, almost 379,000 active cases, up from 121 active cases a year ago. So after more than a year of using a jab to prevent hospitalizations, deaths, and infections, we have an exponential growth once again in deaths and cases and hospitalizations. So why is the government not looking at this? If you do something and you can see very well that not only is it not working, but it's counterproductive and it's dangerous, then it is your job, if you are Brendan Murphy, if you are the head of the Department of Health, it is your job to stop it. And he has not done his job. And that is what our case is about. Our case is to get him to do his job that he's paid very, very well for.
And failing miserably. If he worked for a private company, not a pharmaceutical company, he would have been blown out years ago. He's just totally useless, along with the rest of them. Can you just tell me, because time's up, if somebody wants to find out more about AVN, how do they do that?
We have a website and there's a lot of information on it. The address is just AVN for Australian Vaccination Network .org.au. And we have right on the homepage quite a bit of information. It's links to the information about the court case. We have our court documents that have been filed and some videos from Julian Gillespie, myself, and other people who are involved in the court case. We have top immunologists and doctors and scientists from around the world who have written affidavits for our case. And the government, I believe, is terrified that this information will get out, because once we go to court, there is no hiding this anymore. It is part of the public record, and we need to make sure that that happens. So they're afraid. They are very much afraid, and I believe that's why all of these delaying tactics are being used. But while they're delaying, children and adults across this country are dying and being permanently injured. There is a Substack that I'd like to recommend people go to if they are on the fence thinking about taking one of these jabs. It's called Real Not Rare on Substack. And every single day they have the stories of several people who reacted after the jabs. And they are quite daunting stories. And I think people need to be hearing them. That's the issue. The stories of the people who had COVID are amplified in the media everywhere. Mm. And that's one thing we don't know. How many of these 6,800,000 people who were diagnosed with COVID had been jabbed against it, since the government says 95% of the people in Australia have had the jab, which is not at all even close to true.
No.
But even if it were a distant figure to that, 6,800,000 people got COVID, supposedly. How many of them were jabbed? Once, twice, three times, four times? And how many jabs will people take? The government committed to buy over 300,000 of these jabs for a population of 25 million. Does that give you any idea?
It's just dreadful. Look, we have to go. Meryl, you're doing a great job. Keep up the good fight. We need people like you and your organization to do this. Thank you very much. This is TNT Radio.
The midterms and America votes on November 8th. With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Jeremy Beck.
The GOP primary election results for the 17th of May show that former President Donald Trump continues to have enormous influence in the party. Of the 26 Trump-endorsed candidates for this latest round of primaries, which were in Idaho, Kentucky, North Carolina, Oregon, and Pennsylvania, just two lost. One was North Carolina's incumbent U.S. Representative Madison Cawthorn. The other was Idaho Lieutenant Governor Janice McGretchen, who ran a challenge against the current governor, Brad Little. McGretchen's loss is a big blow for Trump and freedom fighters in general, as her campaign hinged on her battle with Governor Little in opposing oppressive medical mandates. While most voters opted to stay with Governor Little, the combined vote of McGretchen and other candidates fighting the COVID medical mandates was close to 50%. Regardless of this loss, medical freedom can't be swept under the rug. I'm Jeremy Beck for TNT Radio.
The journey of 1,000 miles begins with the first step. At Children International, we know that the journey to end poverty for good begins first with a child. It starts with their first checkup, lesson, opportunity, job. That journey takes commitment from people like you and me to end poverty for good. Learn more at children.org.
For the news and talk you can't hear anywhere else.
It gives you some awareness of what's really going on.
Where things are at, even around the world.
Today's News Talk Radio. TNT.
Now, Graham Haycroft is founder of the Red Union Group. Red Union is the umbrella organisation that supports nurses, teachers, doctors, police officers, transport workers, and miscellaneous workers across Oz. Now, membership is over 17,000. And Graham's had a long career in industrial relations, starting in the 1990s. First of all, Graham, thanks for joining us.
It's a pleasure, Mike.
Now, your mob and our mob have created a bit of a some angst amongst the loveys out there, and with the MEAA, which is the what's MEAA again? That's the
media
and entertainment. Yep.
Yeah.
They've got the nose out of joint because the Kennedy Awards, the main sponsor, I believe.
Well, indeed we are. The AJA is, and you've supported us in that in that sponsorship, and we're serious about it. We're throwing $100,000 in a year.
Yep.
And for 5 years, so that the thing will stabilise. It's been very, very successful in the past, and I thought it was a great project. And the guy who founded it, it's named after Liz Kennedy, who was a great Indigenous court reporter, a great character. The guy who co-founded the Kennedy Awards with him, Adam Walters, the sky manager who spoke to me said, this is a really good project because we're in the same building as the sky. Mm-hmm. And he convinced me, and we got in touch, put us in touch with Anna Magnus and the board. Mm. I think there's about six or eight women on the board, and by cracking, it all good. And we were most impressed. So we said, right, this is something that's very important. Mm. Journos have been pushed from pillar to post, and it's about time that we set up an institution which will look after them without fear or favour, not be political. No money, no membership money will ever go to a political party, which is certainly the MEAA certainly can't say that. And anyway, that's it. And it's put a few noses out of joint, which wasn't the intention.
But it's good though.
I think competition is always good. The journalists are going to end up with two rocking awards. They've got the Walkley Awards now, which is run by the MEAA.
But ours is best. Ours is the best one.
Well, I would like to think that. And if it's not the best, we've got a few years to make sure it is the bloody best.
We're better looking. We're much better looking.
Well, and we don't no fear or favour.
No.
And this was a condition of our sponsorship, as you know, is that we had no input at all or no influence on any of the awards. The board would be left entirely to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so no one can sit back and say, oh, yeah, he picked on him because he's a mate of so-and-so.
Mm.
Well, that ain't going to happen. So, no, I've been wrapped in the board. I think they're really, really strong and... it's going to be a great award in August.
But the Media, Entertainment and Arts Alliance, who are associated with the Labor Party, and they pushed their barrow, but they've come out and said, we may boycott it, or the journos may boycott it. I mean, first of all, it's a bit petty, isn't it, to say they're going to boycott it?
Oh, who cares? I mean, the good journos are going to enter. You don't have to be a member of the AJA to enter, and we specifically said that's not to be the case. So we want every journalist to enter all the different categories that apply to them. And, it's about excellence, rewarding excellence in journalism. And, I'm proud to do it. I hope you are too.
Mm. I think the what is missing at the moment, this is just my observance, Your Honour, is the lack of truth. I mean, we spoke to a very well-credentialed journalist in Canada, Trish Wood, won a bunch of awards, been with the mainstream Loveys for a long time and switched over and said things aren't right. And she said there is a massive fail of journalism. And what we need is, do you often think about the old days where they used to just report on the news?
Well... part of the let me answer it this way. Part of the project, a journalist said to me, "You're going to adopt the old AJA code of ethics." I must say, it hadn't occurred to me.
Mm.
So I went and had a look, and the oldest I could find actually was 1944, and I thought, "Gee whiz, if only they'd write codes of ethics like this today," because it basically says three things: one, tell the bloody truth; two, don't pinch your colleagues' work, and three, don't dish your colleagues. That's the guts of it, and it's 12 lines. But the current MEAA code of ethics, and I'm not going to be critical of it other than to say it's bloody pages and pages and pages of stuff. At the end of the day, it's about simply reporting the truth, and journalists, of course, they're commercial operators. They're going to make it interesting. And to do it in an interesting way, and the best arbiter of truth in reporting is to have competition, because the people aren't stupid. They'll work it out. The publishers are ultimately responsible for the content, and the onus is on them. And I think that we've got to make it their responsibility. And what we need is more competition. We need more TNTs.
Oh, we do. And that's good. We need it to be done properly instead of a backyard operation. It has to be done properly and tell the truth. Now put your head down and your backside up and work, as they would say in the olden days in 1946, work bloody hard. Roll your sleeves up. Find the story. Yeah. Report the story as is. Don't let your interpretation smudge that story. I mean, just thinking when they wrote those code of ethics in 1946, of course, though, they had a very good workplace environment. I'd imagine it'd be full of smoke. You wouldn't be able to see each other. And there'd be a couple of empty whiskey glasses lying around. That's what I would imagine anyway.
Yes, exactly. And I went through it and I just updated without introducing anything else. And I mean, we haven't decided whether we going to adopt it, but it seems to me to be a good one because it's so simple. Because in 1944, all the journalists were blokes, and they're all employees, and they all work for the newspapers. So, you know, all I did was just go through it. It took me about 5 minutes or less, and just made the hisses into thems and fraternal into collegial and just expanded out. It's not just news news report, about newspapers, but it's also audio and video.
And in those days. In those days, a journalist, as we wind this up, would have had a Brill cream, cigarette and braces. That would have been the requirements, I would imagine. Hey, if somebody wants to find out more about the Kennedy Awards, how do we do this?
Well, I think the Kennedys have got a website. So the Kennedy, excuse me.
I said it's
10 days ago and I've still got the whiny cough.
That's a cigarette.
I've got a funny cough button, I'm sorry.
Rolly.
The Kennedy Foundation, I think it is. They've got their own website.
Yep.
We haven't really got the AJA website quite finished yet. There's some stuff we're still negotiating, professional indemnity insurance for the contractors. That's probably still a couple of weeks away, and we don't want to. When we release it and say, "Come and join us," the journalists have got to know, "Hey, this is what the offer is."
Yep.
The stage. We're doing it. We've roughed out the website.
Okay.
And we've got the issues.
Graham Haycroft, thank you very much. This is TNT Radio.